It's 1:32 a.m. at a dumpy little office building in beautiful downtown Culver City, and you're listening to Night Call.
Night Call.
Hey everyone, I am Molly Lambert, and today I have my special friends with me.
Tess Lynch and
Emily Yoshida in New York.
Hey guys.
Hey.
Hi. I love our dumpy little office building in Culver City. You know, not quite as nice as the Audio Boom studio, but a good place to churn out some content, as you might have learned this week.
Our cubicle is very well sound engineered.
Ooh. Molly wrote a really interesting piece this week on Rhizome. Is that right? I was kind of familiar with it.
It has a lot of terms. It's like the net art anthology at Rhizome for the New Museum.
Got it. Yeah, about your favorite and mine, Jack FM, the original Spotify playlist.
Yeah. My friend, the artist Guthrie Lonergan, did a project called 93.1 Jack FM Los Angeles 2008 that is up on an online exhibition on Rhizome right now. That is a net art anthology exhibition, and they asked me if I would write an essay about it, and I said, sure, I would love to. Also up on their website, because I love Jack FM. I love thinking about Jack FM. And Guthrie did this really amazing project where he kind of like scraped an algorithm, basically, in 2008 that Jack FM put up of their last three songs to sort of try and make sense of what the Jack FM formula is. Jack FM, for those who might not know, is a radio format that just kind of plays randomly through an algorithm, I think.
Isn't their log line basically, we play what we want?
Play what kind we of? Want. But it's like, we is the machine.
Yeah, we is the machine, and what we want is like, Guthrie's project was sort of trying to figure out like what are the parameters of playing what we want for Jack FM. And it's fascinating because it makes you crazy, like trying to figure out what the Zodiac is all about.
Well, to be clear, so Jack does not exist, but he there's a voice actor who has always been Jack, I think. It's based off of, you said, a Canadian station called Bob FM and Dave FM. I did a close read. I'm fascinated by this.
Oh, wait, Canadians invented the Jack FM format?
Yeah, they invented Bob FM, and then it spawned offshoots that were like Joe FM.
Dave.
I love that.
But I like that their American version is Jack.
Yeah, and then I used it as an opportunity to talk about Wolfman Jack, who is a great DJ, and just talk about DJs and freeform radio and algorithms and all things I like. So check it out if you are looking for something to read on the internet. It was really fun to write. So.
We'll link to Night Call Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. But also, Molly, you just said you like Jack FM, but in the piece, it sounded kind of like you didn't like Jack FM.
No, I do like Jack FM. I come to it for something other than, like, finding out about new music. What I'm saying that I like about it is it's, like, it's just a weird format because it is about, like, being nostalgic for listening to badly compressed radio versions of things. And I'm not a purist. I listen to badly compressed radio all the time, just when I'm driving, even though I could, like, listen to real music off of my phone at this point. But there's something very comforting about just, like, someone else is choosing.
Well, it's kind of the radio. It's the Proustian ode to the commute.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, commute in a bottle.
I always felt that the Jack FM, the taste level or zone of Jack FM kind of felt like if you walked into any like bar at a hotel that had like hot wings, but it was sort of a little bit sad, but they would basically be playing Jack FM.
Jack FM is where everybody knows your name.
Yeah, it's the everyman's playlist or something.
Yeah, and what I was saying also is like other radio stations that are corporate and owned by Our Hair Radio, the new name of Clear Channel, you know, the DJs there aren't really picking the records either. They're like, oh, we're going to play, you know, this Chris Brown record, they like act like they're picking it.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, I can't wait to hear that new Cardi B. I'm going to play it for you next hour. And it's like, well, you have to play it like five times an hour.
Yeah. Hence God's plan being on like every 5 minutes when I've been renting a car over the last month. I was just talking about this at a work meeting because we were talking about God's Plan and how it's like totally mediocre but still managed to like get to the top of the charts. And I'm like, yeah, they're playing it every 3 minutes on every single station, like in Los Angeles at least when I had a rental car there, and then in New York when I had a rental van out here, I was just listening to that song nonstop.
Right, and the way the DJs are like, we're going to play it because we can't wait to hear it. And
oh,
like, no,
man, I love this one.
Someone paid you to play it. But that's also how songs like get in the popular consciousness, and then everyone's like, gotta hear it again. Mm-hmm.
What's the deal? Does K-Day, do K-Day's DJs still pick their own music then? Or is, because K-Day was bought by, what, a Chinese corporation, mm-hmm. I think a couple years ago, and then but then it continued to broadcast as K-Day. But K-Day always has this, they've at least convinced me, but maybe it's an illusion that the DJs are choosing things.
It's an illusion.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Okay.
They're like a classic rock station, but for rap. Classic hip-hop. So it's still just like there's like a list of like mm-hmm. 5,000 songs they play in yeah. whatever order. It just was novel at the time because we were like, oh, look, it's like a classic rock station, but for rap.
Right. Yeah. I think I'm still just sad because, what was it? 100.3. There was a classic rock station that recently. Yeah. No. Well, oh. Indie died a while ago, but yeah, then yeah. not. I think it was 100.3. It was a classic rock station, and they just ceased airing a couple of weeks ago and became like a Christian station.
Oh, is that the one that has those billboards that's like music for calming your life?
Probably.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I've seen
the billboards, and they're really good because they're really Black Mirror-y because they just
Soma
say
Radio.
Yeah, they don't say anything about what the format is. They just say 100.3, and it's like against a background of clouds, which is how you know it's maybe spiritual.
It's spiritual. And
that you're going to die while listening to it.
It just says encouraging music.
As opposed to all those mainstream discouraging music stations.
It makes me want to listen to it when I see the billboard. I'm like, I could use some encouragement.
They're encouraging you towards the wrong thing.
I totally end up listening to Christian music on like road trips. I guess
gospel's good.
I like dipping in.
Yeah.
It's good
but they didn't have to take the classic rock.
Yeah. But that's the thing is now you can find, if you want like a good classic rock station, there's satellite radio.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody listens to FM radio except people in their cars on commutes or just driving around randomly, yeah. like us. So it's interesting. I like thinking about stuff like that. So thanks, Rhizome.
Yeah.
And thanks, Guthrie Lonergan, my genius artist friend who is very good at the internet and art. Speaking of art.
Nice.
speaking of uplift.
Speaking of encouragement.
Encouraging? Yeah. So you guys finally got around to seeing Phantom Thread, which.
We did.
We should preface by saying this was somewhat at the recommendation of a listener who called in a while ago, but also just my general badgering as well to both of you guys so that we could talk about it. Tell me about your experience.
Well, now I have an excuse to post the caption, give me thread till I'm dead, that I've been planning on. That's the title of this episode.
Oh, please, yes.
I'm going to let Tess take it.
Tess, don't do this.
Tess, encouragement?
I have a lot of good things to say about Phantom Thread, things I liked, but in the end, I'm going to say that I probably liked it the least of all of us, I'm guessing.
Interesting.
I had two of my favorite scenes that I thought made it a great movie for me alone was the dunking of a spear of asparagus into congealed butter, the sound effects of eating. I love all of these things. And then there was an exchange between the House of Woodcock. Get it together.
How old are you?
Get it together. Look, I thought it was a very, very funny movie. I thought it was beautiful and very luscious. And I also was kind of like, I don't care very much about the relationship between a narcissistic artist and his muse. And I don't care about bespoke fashion. And I just found myself a little alienated, but I still really enjoyed it. It's just, it didn't punch any buttons for me. Molly's sitting here like gleefully smile. She loved it.
I loved it.
She loved it.
I loved it. And then I went home and I made a list. This is the first time I've taken notes for the podcast.
Ooh.
I'd like to read
Grace Smith.
I'd like to read my notes.
Yes, please. Live reading.
Here are my notes. Phantom Thread. Notes. Eyes Wide Shut is my first note. My second note is Sam and Diane. The Phantom of the Opera. Prêt-à-porter.
Ooh.
Wuthering Heights. Those are my notes.
Prêt-à-porter, the Altman film?
Yeah.
Oh my God, let's bring it back. The most hated Altman film of all time.
It's so good.
Yeah,
it's
no, so good. It is what it is. It's just
a great movie about the fashion world.
Yeah, and how many of those are there, aside from, like, arguably the first Zoolander movie?
That's true.
So you were, how would you describe your feeling after leaving the movie? Because I had a very particular one.
I mean, you said you really needed a stiff drink. We really needed a stiff drink in, like, the middle.
Yeah. We had a stiff drink break.
We were just, it does make you, I mean, we're talking about it in terms of Mother a lot, too, because I was like, are you more or less stressed out than you were during Mother? And Tess was like, I'm less stressed out, but I'm also, like, less engaged.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. So, I think these two movies are so, like, they hit a lot of the same themes in a way that I think is, like, it's very fortuitous that we are doing them back to back. Because, yeah, it's, like, this very particular, this domineering creative male persona and his wife / partner / muse living with him.
But who else relates to the dominating male persona?
What? Who does?
Did you relate more to her or to him?
Oh, that's one of the reasons why I had to, like, go take a drink afterwards, because I was like, I'm both of them at the same time.
Lucky
and
you.
I don't know which one I, like, I don't know how to feel about this movie. I don't know how to feel about what it portends for. For my relationship and any relationship in the future.
Yeah, I liked, Tess was like, what do you think it was about? I was like, it's about how, like, marriage is, like, mutually agreeing to, like, kill each other slowly over a long period of time. But
yep.
Just, like, a little bit of poison.
Yeah,
spoiler.
Just a tiny bit of, well, do you know the story that Paul Thomas Anderson has told about it as far as its origins as an idea?
Yes, because I read everything.
Okay,
about
but
it.
I don't. So tell
I mean,
us.
It's kind of love. So it's that, you know, he is married to Maya Rudolph, and it's one of the most enviable, I would say, one of the more enviable show business marriages currently going. And you know, he's an artistic man, and I'm sure that he's maybe not always the easiest person to live with. And there was some point at which he got really, really sick and was laid up in bed, and Maya Rudolph was, like, feeding him and taking care of him, and, like, realizing that, you know, when he's kind of taken off of his game or, like, forced into into physical submission via illness, that, like, suddenly their relationship was so much more tender and loving. And that was the beginning of the movie. And then he called up Daniel Day-Lewis and was like, let's make a movie.
There's a Curb Your Enthusiasm about that it made me think of, where, like, Larry gets sick and Cheryl is, like, tending to him very tenderly, and then she gets sick and he's like, what do you want me to do?
I feel like somebody needs to do the edit of
the mashup between those.
Yeah, just with the music cues over Phantom Thread. I think it would be incredible. It would be perfect.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, too, because I was like, okay, well, Paul Thomas Anderson, like, what the main thing we know about him romantically is that he, like, only dates female geniuses.
Yeah.
So I also thought it was like, I was like, he doesn't date, like, muses. Like, Maya Rudolph is a genius, and then he dated Fiona Apple, who's also a genius. So what happens when there's, like, two geniuses in the room?
Well, that's why I think he understands the side of oh, man, I'm totally forgetting her name, but
Vicky Creeps.
But what's her character's name?
Alma.
What?
Alma?
Oh, Alma, that's right, yeah. Just like Persona?
Yeah, I also thought she looked a lot like the chick from Persona.
Yeah,
is her name. Her official name is the chick
Not
from Persona.
Liv Ullmann.
Liv Ullmann.
Yeah, Liv
the other one.
The other one. BB Anderson. Yeah.
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 Yeah, no, she, I mean, I feel like that's what Phantom Thread, I feel like, has over Mother. If you want to talk about both of them as movies about this dynamic, about living with a creator in any sense of the word, is that I feel like both sides are equally explored and, you know, dealt with. And it's not like this one domineering person and one, you know, person who has to, you know, submit to the whims of that person. Like, it's both, it's a push and pull, and it gives agency to both sides. And I think that was what makes it so, like, it's like, it feels like something I haven't really seen that kind of dynamic on screen before, because, like, I totally did feel like I'd licked a battery after watching it.
Well, Molly found an interesting quote from Jennifer Lawrence on Phantom Thread.
Yes.
Which, would you like to read it, Molly?
You read it in the voice of Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, I think you're the J-Law of this podcast.
Okay, I'm doing it in my own voice. But she said, I got through about 3 minutes of it. I put in a good solid 3. I'm sorry to anybody who loved that movie. I couldn't give that kind of time. It was 3 minutes, and I was just oof. Is it just about clothes? Is Reynolds Woodcock kind of like a narcissistic sociopath, and he's an artist, so every girl falls in love with him because he makes her feel bad about herself, and that's the love story? I haven't seen it, so I don't know. I've been down that road. I know what that's like. I don't need to watch that movie. Laughs.
Okay, first of all, queen Jennifer Lawrence doing the thing I always do, which is to tell you a whole opinion about a movie you haven't seen.
But also, I feel like she's, you know, she's showing her hand a little bit there.
I think she's talking about Chris Martin also.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
She said this quote in an interview with Marc Maron, which also made me go, like, what did Marc Maron think of Phantom Thread? Was he like, it's just like me?
Yeah.
I gotta have everything away.
Yeah. Weaving my pods.
Who are my guys? But yeah, I was like, she's also doing Howard Stern next week. So, you know, but I mean, people were going hard on her for even this quote. They were like, what, does she never want to work with Paul Thomas Anderson? I was like,
not everybody.
She said she didn't see
Paul
the
Thomas.
Movie. Yeah. Everybody wants to work with Paul Thomas Anderson. And maybe she was like negging him, because that's also what the movie would tell you. He likes a spirited lady.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, well, this is the other thing. She kind of, I feel like she touches on this in her quote, and this has been a low-level debate, I guess, maybe kind of among film Twitter, is like, is this film, I guess, advocating for Reynolds Woodcock's behavior, or...
No.
Like, yeah, and I feel like it's so self-evident, or it's like, it's not necessarily like taking sides, but I think it certainly recognizes that his way of life, maybe untenable isn't the right word, because it certainly seems like it's been tenable and led him to success before then.
It only fits one person.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, you can either find someone who's willing to like mold their life around, like, you're the person, and they are standing, as they kept saying. She just stands. She mm-hmm. likes to stand.
I will stand there forever.
But it's like, it's also implied that like, if he changes anything about his working pattern, it like affects his work, and like falling in love fucks up his work, which is also what La La Land is about. I was realizing.
Yeah.
You know, and is like an interesting thing, especially for all of us are writers. We like do a thing that you can only do by yourself, that you like mm-hmm. cannot bring anyone else into, and you have to be like in a little like chapel of the mind mm-hmm. to do. And that is weird for anyone else who has to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because they can't do it with you.
Yeah. I feel like there was some, I didn't read this whole interview, but I think I saw an excerpt from it somewhere, which is just the nature of everything now. But it was between, I think it was between Greta Gerwig and, I want to say it was Lord. I think that was it. But they were just talking about the process of like, you know, working on a body of work, whether that's a film script or an album or something, and how you do it, like the process of doing that when you have a partner in your life, and how, you know, a lot of guys are just as not, you know, understanding, or it's hard to, you know, adjust your life around, now I'm going to go into this other room in my life and work on a thing that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with you at all, and that's just the nature of my work. And I was like refreshing to hear women talking about that, because I think that is just as real, if not more real, to like build your artistic world versus the world that you share with your partner. But yeah.
And it's also like the way women are socialized to like, you're supposed to be like taking care of someone all the time. So being like, I have to just go do this thing that like only I can do. It benefits you in no way. And like
self-care.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate the term self-care. Also, one thing that I really got obsessed with I liked about the movie was how his hunger for just fat was kind of ran through the whole movie. Like he just wanted like cream, butter, fried thing, butter.
That just seemed very British to me. But then I was also like, why aren't there baked beans on the toast?
No, because he's fancy. But then it's like you never really saw him. He did. He had the rare bit. You don't see him eat very much. He sits there with the stuff and he orders, but it's like when he eats the asparagus and then he's chewing like one or two other times, but then everyone else is like chomping.
You don't see him eat. You don't see them fuck. It's interesting because
they only kiss once, right?
Well, it's also like in There Will Be Blood. It's like the character in There Will Be Blood is also sort of like driven by these like immense lusts, but like not for sex.
Which and the milkshake. There was a lot of the drink it up.
Tess also was like, was a little curious about the like when he says he's a confirmed bachelor, she was like, oh, he's gay, because that is what that signals.
Well, he also said that if he were in a marriage it would be deceitful.
I said that's because he would cheat. It would be deceitful.
That was clearly one meaning, but then I was kind of like, oh, I see where this is going.
I felt like you said it would be deceitful because it's just like to say he needs a marriage in his life would be deceitful. It would be like walking through some sort of societal, you know, norm in order to, I don't know, conform to something, but he doesn't actually need a marriage in his life. I did have the thought that he was gay, of course, you know, obviously whatever stereotypes about fashion designers, but like it didn't really seem, he was just, I don't know, he just seemed like almost asexual.
What I feel like Daniel Plainview is a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, some references to Daniel Plainview being, like, impotent.
Mm-hmm.
But all he cares about is oil. And here it's, like, all he cares about is, like, the lovely velvet.
I tweeted this after I saw the movie. And I can't remember if it was right after. But, like, I kind of feel like I stand by this in certain ways. And I want to run it by you and see what you guys think. Which is that Paul Thomas Anderson is one of the best cinematic scholars of romance currently working.
Well, I love Punch Drunk Love, and Tess also loves Punch Drunk Love, which is one of my favorite romances ever. I love romances, you know? Yeah. I like a big romance.
Oh, do you?
Well, Tess was kind of like, why did he make this movie of all the movies he could have possibly made?
Well, it's more like, why didn't he make a movie that I would like more? Why didn't he think, what would she want? Like, I mean, I liked The Master. It wasn't my favorite.
Oh, I love The Master. But
I liked it. I liked it a lot. And this one is like a little bit shy of The Master on the gauge. And I still love P.T. I mean, I love him. And I love every movie he makes is, you know, there's nothing offensively bad, obviously. It's still a tour de force. It's still a great movie. I think it's just a question of like when you have a mind that you know, filters things and turns them into these amazing movies. Like, I just didn't want it to be about the dresses, man.
You didn't want it to be about the dresses.
Guys, it's about...
I know it wasn't about the dresses.
Tess was like, is this movie about capitalism? You can tell me. And I was like, kind of, because it's about like bespoke couture.
That's also a quick deviation because Molly was recently telling me that Boss Baby, that she was listening to a podcast where it was...
Yes, there was a good Chapo Trap House episode about Boss Baby. Yeah. About how Boss Baby is about capitalism.
And it, which totally made sense to me. Yeah.
This movie, to me, falls into the category of Mother and Zodiac, of like movies that are about filmmaking, that are like, I'm going to pretend it's about this other thing, but it's clearly about filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was reading about it all night, because I was like, I have to find the secret of Phantom Thread, there was a thing about how P.T. Anderson was the cinematographer on this movie, that he like he couldn't get Eldridge to do it, so he did it himself.
Wait, why? I wonder why he couldn't.
He was like unscheduled to do something else, and he was like, I'm gonna do it myself, which I was like, well, that's what the movie's about. It's like someone you can't let anyone else do anything for them, which is also like Zodiac. It's like, I need to just like pore over my materials. And then Mother, he just needs to like work on his poem. And
it's,
you're like,
so beautiful.
I see what
shot.
You're all doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see how you're making an obsessively detailed movie about how you're like obsessively can't stop thinking about details ever.
I think it's very, I think that they're both kind of assholes in a way, which is kind of the point. But I think like one other thing that people have kind of picked up on it is the fact that they bond over this thing where they have to go get the dress back from this heiress who's
the socialite,
which is based on a real story. That's like a real chapter in history. I saw somebody talking about that where they're like, this was like the thing that I wrote my master's thesis about, this you know, weird little oddball footnote in history about this this kind of scam artist guy marrying this kind of past marrying age heiress and like this disastrous marriage that ensued, that is based on, like, that's what it was based on in the movie. But but yeah, that they kind of, that's where they bond, is like going to like steal the dress back from her and like shame her for behaving poorly in the dress, and like they're both like, right. Oh yeah, we're both assholes. Like, yeah.
He falls in love with her because she's like, I'm crazy too.
Yeah.
We're also, we haven't even talked about Cyril.
Oh, Tess loves, yeah, Cyril.
I'm obsessed. I mean, I think everybody really loves Cyril.
A woman named Cyril.
A woman, mm-hmm, named Cyril. That was kind of like the heart and soul of the movie to me. And I identified more with Cyril.
And you were also like, is there incest? Is the plot twist going to be incest?
Yeah, yes, I was waiting for that too. I had my antenna up for all sorts of things in this movie that didn't end up like coming to fruition.
No, me too. But that's what I also liked about it. Like weird portals. Tessa.
In that way, it was the opposite of Mother, where you were expecting, you know, something that kind of made sense within that world, and instead it was just like a minefield where everything just blew up and, like, you know, every possible horrible thing happened. And this was kind of like, oh, look, he's throwing up. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. But yeah, Leslie Manville, that was such an amazing performance to me, to see someone so have such stillness and to be able to control your face that way, mm-hmm, is like, yeah, to really make it into this like mask. I
like this movie as like the inverse of Boogie Nights too, where I was just like, you know, if somebody was like, you can go make a movie in England, because he's never made a movie outside the West Coast, really. He, like, Heart 8 is in Reno, and then all, mm-hmm, his other movies have been in California, mm-hmm, so this was like, you know, it's just like the light in England, the way that the light is in, yeah, this movie is just like the polar opposite of the San Fernando Valley. Yeah. It's like,
it's white, you know, and clean and, yeah.
Yeah. And then the light here is all just like beautiful and blue and hazy and everything's either like fire lit or like, mm-hmm, totally foggy.
It's diffused. It's naturally diffused because of smog.
Yeah. And it just felt very Kubricky to me. Which must be how it feels for anyone who like gets to go make a movie in England with a big budget, because I think this was maybe his biggest budget movie also.
Yeah.
And what was it, $35 million, I think?
Yeah, so just like that big party scene, I was like, oh, we're in The Shining now, because we're at a weird New Year's Eve party.
That wasn't clear to me, that scene, that she got like kind of hustled around.
She was like, your life sucks. You never go out. I don't want to be married to an old guy.
But then when
she basically went
there,
to a rave by herself, and he went to
the rave. But then she was having fun, and he sees her, and then all of a sudden she's abruptly not having fun. But I felt as though she should have been having less fun.
Somebody like knocked into her, and then she was like, this isn't fun anymore. And he was like, it's time to go home. And she was like, you're right.
I don't know.
We're in a codependent relationship.
Oh, man.
Well, I don't know. I like any movie that interrogates like the director-actress relationship, because it's one of the weirdest things in the world. Yeah. And that's why Mother was so weird, because you were like, okay, but actually for real. So of course Jennifer Lawrence couldn't handle this. She like just went through it for the fifth, yeah, time.
I will say, even knowing how fucked up that relationship, or that the designer muse relationship or whatever, you know, substituted it is on screen, the images of them, like when they're doing the campaign photo shoot, and he's on the floor like gazing up at her and she's wearing
that's
the gown.
A great scene.
Well, first of all, Paul Thomas Anderson is great at doing scenes of people getting their photos taken in olden times, because that's also in The Master, and it makes you think about how those images look when you see them in the present day and like what actually was going on when they were shot.
Right, because when his like face falls, when he's like looking up at her blindly, and then it's like cut. And
yeah,
like,
there's so much going on. But just the image itself, even knowing all that and all the baggage that's there, I'm like, I want a photo like that. Like, it looks so fantastic. But yeah, it's I liked it a lot.
I'm glad you were the impetus for us to see it.
I liked it too. I feel like it could have been anything other than dressmaking and it would have been the same movie. Yes. Is that weird? I was just like, it could be any
taxidermy.
He had to give something to Daniel Day-Lewis to go and study up for a while he wrote the script and everything. He's like, go learn about fashion.
I was like, he made a dress. And Tess was like, really?
I was like, of course. And that's why his thumb maybe was probably his real thumb.
You know who I bet loves this movie?
Who?
Kanye.
Oh my God.
Totally.
Yes. This is
also the thing where he's like, it doesn't really matter. Like, I just met you. Nothing about you matters except your proportions. And then I can, like, do whatever I want with them.
And he's like, you have no breasts. I'll give you them if I want.
Yeah.
If I want.
And just the thing about, like, the woman who's, like, replaceable and you just find a new one, which is also a very big, like, director-actress thing, obviously. It's like the men stay the same from movie to movie, but you get, like, a new ingenue every time. Stuff I like to think about in terms of movies. It was a little Hitchcocky also.
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
Reminded me of, there's a lot of like poisoning people secretly in Hitchcock movies.
So as I mentioned, the suggestion to talk about Phantom Thread came from one of our lovely night call listeners or night callers. I don't know. Is that what we should call them? Night callers.
Yeah, night callers.
And that person left a voicemail for us at 240-46-NIGHT, which you can do too, and leave us any of your thoughts, questions, theories, talking points, what have you.
We also have an email.
We do have an email too. It's nightcallpodcast@gmail.com if you prefer to express yourself that way. We welcome any and all. But we have a call this week coming to us from Conrado.
Hi. This is Conrado from New York, and I guess I have a question mainly for Emily, since I know she's a big fan of anime, and you guys were talking about Yuri on Ice last episode. So I've seen a lot of Studio Ghibli movies, and I love them, but I've struggled with almost every other anime that I've seen. I think it might be the science fiction aspect that doesn't do it for me. For example, I loved the first half of Your Name when it was basically a body swap comedy, but then the science fiction kicked in and I tuned out. Others that I've seen and have been underwhelmed by include Akira and Ghost in the Shell, so I was hoping for some non-science fiction anime that you might be able to recommend. Thank you.
All right. This question I feel like couldn't have come at a better time, because I've been doing a deep dive on some vaguely not science fiction. I mean, I guess it depends on what you mean, because I guess people mean a lot of different things when they talk about science fiction. Like, do you mean you don't care for stuff about cyborgs or space operas or that kind of thing? Or
it's really hard for us to understand people not caring about cyborgs.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to put myself in that space, but at the same time, there is, and it is true that it's like very wrapped up and like there's a high crossover rate with anime and science fiction. I think because, you know, you can do pretty much anything you want in animation, so why not make it be aliens and spaceships and stuff?
Well, you also wrote a great article about Ghost in the Shell when the remake came out that was about sort of like why anime and science fiction go so well together.
Yeah. It's it all has to do with World War II.
Yes, spoiler alert, atomic bombs. But I have a suggestion after you.
Oh, I'm going to leave out the one that I have a guess you might suggest, but I also know that you've been watching some Little Witch Academia. So maybe, and I don't know. I don't think that qualifies as sci-fi. There's so much fantastical stuff in anime, so
And hard fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah. Not so maybe soft fantasy. Soft fantasy. That's like the name of my chill wave act. But I so what I've been watching recently, and I because they're doing a, I think they already did this in LA, but they're gonna, at Metrograph, they're doing a little short-term revival of Mind Game by Masaki Yuasa. And he's like a very, he's like, he's kind of not for everybody. His style is very, very expressive and all over the place. And his most famous film, and the one that they're showing at Metrograph this weekend, is called Mind Game. And it's like extremely trippy and involves the afterlife and being stuck in the belly of a whale. And there's just like a bunch of stuff going on with it. And the ending of it is just like completely cathartic and incredible and kind of confusing, as many of the best anime finales are. But I would recommend... there's a show that he did that I'm starting to watch now. I'm like kind of in the middle of, called Ping Pong. It's about ping pong. It's sort of similar to Yuri on Ice in that it's like very detail oriented about the sport that it's about and all these different competitors and stuff. And it's got a kind of very dry sense of humor, and the animation is really unique and pretty cool looking. That would be my first recommendation. Molly, what about you?
My recommendations, one recommendation is for if you don't like things to be scary at all, and because I was looking for like mundane anime for a while, because I love just mundane
British Bake Off anime.
Maybe that's also why I liked Phantom Thread a little bit, because I was like, ooh, everyone's so repressed and like the stakes are so weird. But there's a show called Polar Bear Cafe that love. That is about a panda, a millennial panda who hates working and has to get a job working in a coffee shop run by a polar bear. And it is so low stakes and chill, and I love it, except all the animals are drawn really realistically instead of cute, which also makes it even cuter somehow.
So relaxing, though. Like, the style
is so relaxing.
Because it's not like there's something, if they were super hyper cute and had in huge eyes, you would feel really confronted by them on the screen. But it's very soft.
It's very realistic, and then they're also just very cute, even though they have like giant fangs because they're bears. A show that I also really like that I got into, but that's really creepy, and I can't tell if it's sci-fi or not because I feel like it's sort of, it's in like the creepy mystery category maybe, is the show Higurashi When They Cry.
Oh, I don't know.
It's maybe also called Cicadas When They Cry. I forget if it's based on a video game or if the video game came off the anime, but it takes place at a festival on an island, and then some weird stuff happens.
That sounds good.
Oh, it's really good.
Does it take place at Governor's Ball?
No, but there's probably some overlap with creepy backstory. Mm-hmm. So I recommend that show. I like shows that are like also about like, you know, high school romance and then there's a cyborg.
Right. Yeah. Like there's a lot of... I mean, there's stuff that's sci-fi because it involves aliens, but like I sincerely loved going and like discovering Urusei Yatsura like for the first time, because I had seen just one of the movies, and then I was like looking through it about a year ago when I was doing my short-lived anime podcast. Shout out to It's Cool Like Anime.
Shout out to Michael B. Jordan, Naruto fan.
Oh my god! Yeah. As if I needed any other reason. That's so adorable.
He set a Naruto thirst trap for you.
God. That's like about an alien girl who like is obsessed with this, you know, shithead earthling boy, but it's like not really, it's just a romantic comedy. It's just like Peanuts but a little pervier or something.
I like that light sci-fi where like everything's normal and then at the end you find out somebody was a robot the whole time.
That's other thing that I was genre. Gonna recommend I was gonna recommend, it's also scary, but like Molly and I love Perfect Blue, which is more just like a kind of thriller with
a little
bit of
I was just thinking about that because I was like, that's not sci-fi, but it like won't help you sleep at night.
No, no. And it's definitely like there's something kind of like kind of psychological at the very least going on in it. It is a genre. It's like a crime movie. It feels like a De Palma movie kind of. But also Satoshi Kon's film Millennium Actress is probably tied with Perfect Blue for my favorite of his. And that one is like, it's just about this actress who's remembering kind of her life intertwined with all the roles that she did over the years. And it's just really beautifully animated and all these sort of things. Because it's animation, you can kind of just like have these things flow, these different episodes in her life flow into one another very seamlessly in like a really incredible way. And I recommend that movie to anybody, whether they're into animation or not, because it's just a great story, well told, as they say.
Tess, are you watching any weird animated shows? Because you often introduce me to some very weird animated shows.
You know, I'm getting a lot of my animated shows from children's shows right now, which I don't hate. Like, I would say I did.
They're so
but
weird.
I'd be lying. They're really weird. I have been watching PJ Masks, which is kind of like anime light, and apparently one of my children is very into Catboy. That's a thing, Catboy. He is a boy who turns into Catboy, and then there's Owlette, who turns into an owl, and one that's like a gecko. I feel like lizards always get like kind of misrepresented in animation because it's like, you know, you'll have like a gecko who changes colors like a chameleon, and you're like, those are discreet. Like, you can't do that.
I heard Rango is good, not anime.
No, Rango is fantastic because it's like Chinatown. Rango is great. And also Rango has, it hits you on some visceral levels. Like there are certain scenes that you'll think of. I was unexpectedly really, really drawn to
You were
Rango.
Watching something for a long time that involved like planes with human faces.
Planes, Fire, and Rescue, Molly. The movie plane starring Dane Cook. That was not my choice. Okay, that was really not my choice.
Wait, is that the Disney one that went straight to DVD or straight to Blu-ray or whatever?
I think Planes, Fire, and Rescue got a wide release. It was like, you know, it's basically the like shitty version of Cars.
Right.
You know, which by the way, Cars is great. One. I like still weep.
Oh, I love Cars.
I love Cars.
Cars is
Cars
great.
Cars 2 was one of the worst movies I've ever seen, right? Cars 3 was okay.
I've seen none of the Cars, but I love Cars Land. So I'm
you
a
should
Fairweather
see Cars.
Fan.
If you love Cars Land, you'll love Cars because it's just like I wish it had no plot and it was just shots of like Route 66 and just the cars driving around.
It's a heartbreaking movie. I mean, honestly, it's a very poignant movie. I've seen at this point, I've seen all of them. Like there are some really like terrible, terrible children's shows that I won't name, but I will just say that like it's strange when you get used to watching, you know, this certain style of animation and then you start seeing what look like, you know, mass produced, like very flat, like expressionless, you know, circular faces and stuff that are just kind of they're being churned out, and like younger kids really like them, but even kids who are like, you know, I have a 5.5-year-old. And he'll sometimes just be like, there's something off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's called something being like bad. Like that's it's because
bad.
It has no quality to like it's bad. Like that's you're reacting to like it's your first the intrusion of badness into your art where you can like discern that it's bad because it's low quality.
And you can tell that somebody does not respect you because they did not make this look better.
But I mean like Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. I hate that I've derailed Conrado's question this way.
It's good,
I'm sorry.
You got the knowledge.
I was never a Mr. Rogers person, and Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood is like a spinoff of Mr. Rogers with like
is it new?
Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood's been going on for a while. I believe it's in its like 9th or 10th season.
Oh.
And it is it's all about emotions basically, and it takes place on this island that has like every single climate. It's like a beachfront and, you know, it has a forest and it snows, but it's also like balmy all the time. They have all this like weird wildlife. There's an enchanted garden, but it's just like a bunch of animals having feelings. But they also have like, there's this whole, sorry, but there's like a royal family and their names are like King Monday and Prince Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, Mr.
Monday.
Rogers.
Yeah.
King Friday.
Yeah, and then they have a trolley. Like it's, Anyway.
I was always a little confused by that because it's like they live in Mr. Rogers' house.
No, they're his neighbors.
Right. It's the land of make-believe.
It's the land of make-believe, but I was always like, is he the god of the land of make-believe?
Yes. He's the landlord of the land of make-believe.
Yeah. Is it like those Twilight Zones where you find like a miniature society and then you fuck it up accidentally?
Yeah.
So maybe at the opposite end of a spectrum, on which one end is Phantom Thread, I wanted to talk a little bit about the modern online fashion retail experience, specifically as it pertains to, well, we could get into it on a few different angles, but I mostly wanted to talk about Chinese fast fashion because I noticed something that I have talked about with you guys before in a offhand way, or just shared links to like goofy shirts that cost $4 on romwe.com. But I kind of also had an experience that has to do with gowns.
Fucking chic.
Some fucking chic gowns that led to some really interesting and hilarious Googling. So if nobody, I feel like this is something that everybody's encountered, like just the automatic ads for these sites that have very trendy, you know, sometimes a little like actually weird in an interesting way, like articles of clothing that are all these Chinese sites and everything is just like $2 or something. And but that exists also for wedding dresses, which has been a thing that I've had to investigate. And so there were definitely like a few dresses that I liked. And apparently I was not the only person, because they were popular enough that they had been ripped off by these Chinese sellers that are mostly, I mostly ran into it on eBay. Because if you search for, you know, whatever the designer is and the name of the dress and everything, then you'll start to see all these like $30 wedding dresses pop up that look exactly like the one that you liked. And I was like, this is too good to be true. Like, it can't actually look like that. And so I did some research and I sent you guys the link to the the Daily Mail post. I feel like this has also been covered on BuzzFeed too. Just these like hilariously not the dress in the picture dresses.
The quotes from people in the article were so funny because they were like, my $15 wedding dress doesn't look like $5 million wedding dress that I thought it was going to. I wanted to know who were all these people that were like, I'm buying a $15 wedding dress.
I mean, we all want it to be real. Let's be real. I mean, I'm in the process of planning a wedding right now, and it is not a cheap activity. And if you could save some money on a dress, maybe, especially if it's a dress you think you're only going to wear once. Which I justified to myself spending more because I was like, I am going to wear this more than once and not have it be a wedding dress. But still, you know, people are up.
I thought you meant like I'm going to have like 10 weddings and we'll get some use out of it as a black widow.
Oh, man.
Never cursed. Never cursed.
Somebody should sew that into my dress. That would be great.
Most of these sites, so I think Yes Style was one I had heard of. Yeah. But yeah, some of them also sell on Amazon as well? Because I ordered something it was one of two times that I've ordered something, and before I opened the box, I was like, why does this smell like poison? And then you open the box and it's like poison smell, like it just pops out and you realize like this has been sprayed by like, you know, it's chemically, it's all made of like plastic and chemicals, and it kind of comes off on your fingers, and the sizing was weird, and I was just like, huh.
Do you guys want to hear an Amazon horror story?
Yes.
Yeah.
My landlord was like, don't order things from Amazon, because like maybe from individual sellers, or, you know? Mm-hmm. He said that he had gotten a box from Amazon that had cockroaches in it.
Ooh!
Oh my God. He opened the box, and I was like, that might happen.
That's horrible.
All the time. Let's never order from Amazon ever again.
Oh, that'll make life easy.
sounds great. You have to really look at the seller on it and you know, check that stuff out. Because I think that Amazon kind of slowly became this global marketplace and everything looks and feels like buying from Amazon when in fact you're shopping from like tens of thousands of these different retailers online. Like that was also in that kind of similar to that video thing that I shared with you guys, the YouTube industrial, like, child magnet video thing. You know, the super violent Elsa from Frozen videos and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
sorry. I was having a hard time trying to figure out how to describe that. But, like, there's the equivalent of that he talks about that's on Amazon is, like, these companies that just make phone cases, but they'll just automatically create these phone cases from stuff that people Google. So, like, yes, there are all these medical images that you could get on cell phones, and I guess they took them down because, like, but nobody was, like, paying attention to what was on
it was
there.
Like Medco sits bath cell phone. yeah
But yeah, so, like, I've had, like, some good experiences getting this stuff. This is a thing, like, I feel like sometimes these things get a bad rap. I ordered something.
Well, they get a bad, I mean, sorry, not to be the horrible person, but they get a bad rap because a lot of them involve sweatshops and slave labor.
Oh,
and
yeah definitely.
But, you know, so do clothes in department stores is the thing. Yes. It's like, you know, I'm not saying that I don't buy stuff that is bad and I shouldn't buy it. That's probably my biggest weakness is, like, Forever 21, you know, because you're like, oh, it's so cheap. You don't think about it.
I have. I mean, I love and admire people who are like, I've stopped shopping at fast fashion places, but that's a privilege not all of us have yet.
No, but, you know, Lacey from Big Bud Press, which is, like, an independent fashion designer that I really like, she was posting because, like, Forever 21 ripped off one of her shirts, and she was posting about it because she was like, look at this shirt in the store, and she was like, somebody got paid to sew this by hand. Like, this wasn't, like, it didn't come out of, like, a machine like you want to think it did. Like, somebody got paid not enough to make this and, like, buy our shirts because we pay people the right amount and they're also handmade and ethically made. You know, and I do think it's one of those things where it's like, sure, it's easy to tell people to buy stuff that's nice, but most people are going to buy the cheap stuff because it's what they can afford.
Well, like, I try never to shop at H&M now, and I never really shop at Forever 21 anyway, but H&M is, like, for a long time was very convenient to my office in Manhattan, and I had an instance where I literally had to go to H&M because I was at the gym around the corner, and, like, a shirt that I had, I just worn it so many times, and it literally fell apart in the gym. So I, like, put my coat on over my top and, like, ran into the H&M to just buy an article of clothing to cover myself up.
I had to go to I was, like, going to a wedding in New York, and I, like, had to buy a dress to go to a wedding, and I was like, I'm going to go to H&M and spend 15 minutes in, like, the Midtown H&M just, like, trying on every dress in sight.
I think that's my H&M. Times Square.
I just love Times Square, as you know.
You're a psycho.
Yeah.
If you don't live in New York, it's very easy to like Times Square because, like, in your mind, it just exists like in a snow globe.
But I also love, like, Hollywood Boulevard. Yeah. I love seeing the people.
Yeah.
Well, I am a psycho.
The other thing I agree. I'm glad that you brought up the sweatshop aspect because I think that is the most important thing to keep in mind. And my main guilt right now is that, like, I have a winter coat, so when I moved to New York and I was like, oh, I can't wear like a little windbreaker when
well,
it gets
I remember because I remember right before you moved to New York you were like, ooh, maybe I can wear like a cute coat.
Yeah,
I'm so excited to finally have an opportunity to wear like my cute like Pendleton coat or something.
Yeah.
And then like a month later you were like, this coat does nothing.
I
have to buy like a sleeping bag to like
you need
put
a sleeping bag
on my body.
And I hate those things so much. Also, they are hella expensive. Like a Patagonia coat, like a sleeping bag coat is like $600 or $700. Like if you want to have ethically sourced down in your winter coat that keeps you, you know, from dying on the streets of New York and when the temperature goes below, you know, 15 degrees.
You better make friends with some geese, my friend.
I know. But like I got this coat that's totally off of Amazon and a total Chinese fast fashion down coat. And I don't know where the fuck these geese came from. Like, it's probably, I don't even want to know. But this thing has been, you know, serving me for 3 years. I get compliments on it all the time. And I'm probably going to have to retire it because it is sort of falling apart. And when I sit down, sometimes at movie screenings, there's like a little cloud of feathers that pop up. It's not the most well-made thing in the world, but it's keeping me warm. And it wasn't $600. It was like $100.
My number one, I browse those sites a lot, but I like rarely actually order anything. But I like to browse in general. And there was, in fact, now that you say fucking chic, there was one that I like always like have my finger on the trigger but haven't bought that is a shirt that's like the Dog Day Afternoon logo. Mm-hmm. I like things where graphic design just gets scrambled.
Yeah.
So there's one, There's one that's a Dog Day Afternoon logo, but the text instead of Dog Day Afternoon says same chic, different day. And I'm just like, how did this happen? Would I wear this?
I feel like I have really, I go through phases where I just really hate having to buy clothes and think about clothes and coordinate clothes and put myself together. And I'm in one right now because of the shift from just normal jeans to these crazy, you know, weird cropped wide leg, and they're all called like mom jeans, and I'm an actual mom, and I know that I don't want to be wearing mom jeans. So the last time this happened was the shift from when everything was kind of like mod, and I was in my early to mid 20s, and I felt like it was okay to wear these really sort of cheesy 60s ripoff things. Mm-hmm. And then everything shifted, and I felt like I didn't like anything I saw. So I went to the Rose Bowl flea market, and they had these, I honestly think that they were burlap sacks that had been made into these like tent dresses that were off-white, and they had like initials sewn in them, and there was a deal on, you could get like three of them. So I just started wearing these knee-length sacks with these weird short, they would just look like, I mean, it looked like I was wearing like, you know, I don't know, like a baby's outfit kind of, but they were, I was like, I love this because it's so aggressively ugly that it seems like a, like I'm doing my own style, well, but it's not, it's just ugly, you know?
Really hot people can wear ugly stuff. That's like the whole, that's what art school is.
Yeah. Right. But if you're like not a really hot person, but you just feel really alienated by things, I mean, I have a hard time also because I'm very stingy, but I also don't want to shop at Forever 21 and H&M and Zara and, like, you know, support sweatshops. So instead I buy strange clothes from thrift stores and then wear things that are mine from, like, a really – like, I still wear pants that I had in high school, which seems like it should not be okay to do and maybe isn't.
I'm amazed that they haven't fallen apart because I have jeans that I've bought in the last 3 years that are falling apart. Actually, all my jeans are falling apart right now.
They have fallen apart, but I still feel entitled to wear them.
I was the person who always wore jeans until they were completely falling apart and like not acceptable in public. And then I stopped wearing jeans for like a couple. This is so boring.
I know. No, I like to hear about people's fashion choices.
It's a phantom
over time.
Thread. Yeah. Well, also in Capitalism. Phantom thread when he's like, you have to like move forward, you can't like stay stagnant, like the fat, you have to change with the times or like they'll leave you behind, where I was like, oh, he's talking about movies and fashion.
Well, the funny thing about the burlap sack thing reminds me of is like another thing like that became an somewhat it was like our conscientious version of fast fashion for so long, which was American Apparel. Specifically the American Apparel factory store downtown. But I remember so there was a period of time in my life when I used to do sketch comedy, and I used to do sketch comedy with a friend of mine where we played American Apparel models, and I basically spoke in this voice that I'm speaking in right now. And but one thing that we did is like, well, we actually just bought stuff from the factory store because it was so cheap, but they just make these like cave women dresses, like they were just they were just like pillowcases that had a neck cut out in the top, and we would just get the biggest size of them that we could and just like basically look like just like somebody threw some fabric on us and threw a belt on us, and just totally overdo that aspect of it. But then I also just like kept the dress that I bought and wore it like to
Tess
go to the grocery
and I are
store.
Known. Tess and I are both really into like wearing something because we think it's funny, and then it just becomes the thing you wear all the time. Yeah. And then someone's like, "What are you doing?" And you're like, "It's funny."
There was a dinosaur hat that we got at Baby Gap that we shared custody of in college.
I don't know what happened to that hat.
I know.
I'm wearing it in a lot of photos on my Facebook from like the 2000s.
It was a child-sized hat that somehow we stuffed onto our adult-sized heads, and it was like it wasn't. It was just to be silly, but then it's like you're walking around with it on your head.
It was very warm.
It was warm.
It was a
fleece.
Good hat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's been freezing here, which, you know, obviously I'm using that term loosely because what I mean is it's been like 55 degrees sometimes.
Brr. 40 but at night.
Nobody knows what to do, including me. I like was getting dressed last night to go out at night, and I was like, okay, I've got like two layers on. I don't know what to do after that. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what the next step up is. I'm wearing all my clothes.
Yeah.
So I've been like throwing on a blanket cape a lot. And then sometimes I see myself in a mirror and I'm like, I look crazy.
Hot tip. The one thing that I will spend money on that's clothes are cashmere socks. Because what? You can wear anything on the rest of your body, and if you wear cashmere socks, you are amazing. Fine.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm sure.
My parents go get them on sale, and then I, like, take them.
The one thing I bought from a Chinese fast fashion site that doesn't even exist anymore, and I can't remember what it was called, but I bought a knockoff of the Coach knockoff of the sweater from The Shining.
Oh, I remember Apollo, that sweater. Yeah.
Apollo 11 sweater, because... I really wanted it. I was never going to get the Coach version. And somebody made a knock. Yeah, sometimes I'll wait for someone to knock off something that I like that's like fancy and I'll never buy. But I'm like, I'll buy a knockoff.
But I love how many layers of meaning there are there, because it's Shining via Coach via Chinese fast fashion site. Like, well, the layers of stuff is great. Yeah.
My favorite one that came up recently, because I do also just look at them for graphic design, because sometimes there are just like, I like, a, you know, when something is like a stepped on copy of something, mm-hmm. it gets weird. Mm-hmm. So there was one that was really good that was, you know, I make fun a lot of all the like sort of fake feminist commerce that's been happening recently, yeah. just like shirts that are like, I'm a feminist, yeah. and this shirt costs $300.
Or I'm a feminist and the shirt costs $10 because it was sewn by people who were making, you know, yeah. pennies mm-hmm. in Bangladesh.
Right, all that yeah. stuff. There's like the high fashion version of that, and then the like literal sweatshop knockoff of like, this is being made by like a woman who is being underpaid, so like, no, it's not feminist to wear this. But there was one that was a knockoff of the Guerrilla Girls Manifesto, which is an uh-huh. 80s feminist artist manifesto that says the benefits of being a female artist. And it's like this famous manifesto where it's like the benefits of being a female artist. And then it's all these things that suck about being a female artist. That's like always being referred to in conjunction with your partner if mm-hmm. they're in the art world, like never being taken seriously, like having lots of free time to work on stuff because, like, people are hiring your male peers. Just all these things. And so then this was, like, you know, someone had made a shirt out of it, and then the stepped-on copy of it was, like, benefits of being a female artist, and then all the text was just, like, garble. like, just letters together that don't spell words. Yeah. And I was, like, this is so funny because it's, like, makes exactly awesome. The same point.
Yeah, that's so cool.
I posted about it on Twitter, and some female artist who I follow was like, I bought it because it was like too good.
I'm about to buy it as well.
Well, I was like, also like the big joke about it that sucks is like nothing has changed since the 80s for female artists. Like this was very, you know, edgy at the time, and it's still edgy because like that stuff is all still true.
That's amazing.
So yeah, I enjoy browsing in general. I like to browse and not buy. That's my general
stuff. Just send links to your friends and it feels as good as wearing the shirt, basically.
Exactly.
Pretty much.
Well, I think
if you want to support independent commerce, check out Big Bud Press because they make great unisex stuff for everybody. Cool. And they've been doing a fundraiser and Lacey is cool.
Cool.
And that was not even SponCon.
That wasn't even SponCon. I just like
out of the goodness of our heart con.
Yeah, she just makes shirts that look like things I would want to wear anyway. I feel like Tess, you would really like it.
I'm on.
Check it out.
It's so weird how much this sounds like an ad but isn't. it worked on me. I was like, I will go buy that stuff. It was not even an ad.
They have a store. Well, in Echo Park.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's Night Call.
Fashion Pod.
Yeah, this has been the fashion special.
Yeah, the fashion special. Brought to you by BigBudPress.com. Just kidding, but not really.
maybe we can all learn to like sew our own clothes.
Yeah,
I tried once.
In the past.
I can sew a button, and I'm very proud.
Exactly.
please, if you listen to this podcast, if you like it, subscribe to us. Leave us a review, give us a rating on iTunes, and you can follow us on Twitter at Night Call Pod, and what are the other ones? Instagram
I have the
at
Facebook.
Night Call Podcast and Facebook at also
Facebook.
At Night Call.
No. Is yes, facebook.com/ Night Call Podcast. And every time we have done a podcast, I'm like, what's the Facebook name again? What's the Facebook? So I wrote it down and now I told you.
We have a poll going, which we'll probably read the results of next week about Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah.
No one agrees with me, by the way. Shockingly.
I haven't checked it recently. I need to.
But the people who do agree with you are going to agree with you the most.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm looking for. Always
passionate
yeah.
core.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
And give us a call with all of your Phantom Thread and non-Phantom Thread related inquiries at 1-240-46-NIGHT.
Or just fashion advice.
Yeah.
We clearly are skilled enough to give it.
You can also email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com.
We are equally good at styling and giving marital advice.
Totally.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye.